Bienvenidos and welcome to the Familia FFP podcast. I'm Jorge Martin, and today we have a very special treat. When I was young, getting started covering high school sports for the LA Daily News, this man was on the beat with the Dodgers, looked up to him like crazy. He later on worked on the desk, and he would sometimes offer me some advice and encouragement, which I so appreciated as a kid sports writer. He's a very familiar face in LA sports media. He's even dabbled in covering politics for a while. Today, he's with the LA Daily News, the Orange County Register, and other newspapers in Southern California as the beat writer for the LA Rams. And he's helping me kick off our beat writer series, which we're going to hit all 32 teams, hopefully, fingers crossed, ojalá. But really, it's my pleasure to introduce our invitado de lujo, Kevin Modesti. Kevin, bienvenidos. Welcome, my friend. How are you?
Jorge, great. Great to be with you. We go back a long way. As you said, you were young then. So was I. I don't know if we appreciated how young that entire Daily News sports staff was, just a lot of super talented people, and we had a lot of fun, and glad to see that you're still having fun.
It really is. And I told you a little bit offline on this. It was the greatest training ground I've ever had in my life. People have asked me what was the greatest classroom. I said, no, the greatest classroom was learning right on a deadline. And nothing teaches you more about yourself and who you are. And it was great. It was like they kicked us, I was 18 years old when I started, and they just, it was like Eric Sondheim, buen amigo, gracias Eric for the opportunity way back when. It just kicked us out of the nest, and it was awesome. It was like sink or swim, and I'm just glad I was able to swim. but it was fun. It was so much fun. So many times, on the quiet moments on the desk, sometimes talking about music or whatever. I learned so much about Springsteen and U2 over those years. I'm still a fan of those today. So
excellent. Well, you mentioned Eric Sondheim. We all learned a lot from watching him, listening to him. The work ethic, the ability to that we all hopefully develop to write sometimes complicated things in a way that everybody can understand. And he is, has been now for what, more than 30 years, one of the leading authorities on high school sports in a high school sports mad part of the country.
Just an incredible person. I mean, you talk about work ethic. I remember there were plenty of times I'd leave the office at 11 o'clock and he's still there. Mm-hmm. And, I finished whatever I needed to do covering my high school football game. And there were times I'd get a phone call from him at 7:30 the next morning. And like, hey, can you get out to a game at 1 o'clock in Glendale College or something like that? I'm like, did you even leave? Incredible. Learned so much from all you guys. And I'm just thankful that you all just really just help, were kind and nice and empathetic to a kid. And it was all of us. So many people. I mean, gosh, Vinny Bonsignori is another guy who came up around my time. I mean, just so many others who just really learned so much. And Ron Epstein now, leads a magazine himself. So just, mi amigo, gracias so much. But
you too.
And today we're going to talk about some fun stuff. I know this is your third season, but hopefully there's a return to normalcy covering the Rams. though I don't know how normal this off season has been, the way it kicked off a couple weeks after the season ended with the playoffs. And let's kind of start there with that big change that we saw this off season. The big trade of Jared Goff to the Lions for Matthew Stafford, an institution with Detroit for so many years, and also Clayton Kershaw's good friend. Even after 11 years. In the league, 12 years in the league for Stafford, he's considered to have one of the strongest arms in the NFL. I think it was Archie Manning says his is still the strongest he's ever seen come through their camp. What were Les Snead and Sean McVay looking to add to the offense with Stafford that may have been lacking before?
Yeah, I mean, they traded a young quarterback, a 26-year-old quarterback, Jared Goff, who had taken them to a Super Bowl, right? For a 33-year-old guy who has never won a playoff game. So right there, it's interesting. And you explore what was going through their mind. I think Snead summed it up when he spoke publicly for the first time after the trade became official, and he said it was a chance to go from good to great. That's the talent they see in Stafford. I know what they see on tape from Stafford is kind of a grandmaster of the quarterbacking game. Whose decision making and poise, to say nothing of his physical toughness, are first rate. And so they're gambling on the idea that you take a quarterback who has never had the chance to have a team around him and a coaching staff around him that can allow him to go places in the playoffs. And you take a coach, Sean McVay, who's, done everything except get over that hump and win a Super Bowl, and that the combination of the quarterback's talent and the coach's brain will allow the Rams to put it all together. You ask, what does he add? The simplest thing is the ability to, hit any receiver any place on the field. And I think to do it in, what they call off schedule situations. Goff was great when things were going well. I think Goff was rarely, although we can think of examples, from last season to the contrary, but Goff was rarely the problem. It's just my perception was he was also rarely the solution. He didn't get you out of trouble, right? So I think they're hoping Stafford gets them out of trouble. He extends plays. He's able to hit the DeSean Jacksons and Tutu Atwells down the field and just open up the playbook in a lot of ways that that McVay was frustrated not to be able to do in the last few years.
You were talking about kind of like opening up the playbook. I mean, this seems to be a very crucial year after this transaction, adding, for the Sean McVay offense. I mean, he was definitely the darling of the NFL up until that Super Bowl against the Patriots. Now, all of a sudden, the last 2 years haven't reached that point. Maybe they didn't have a Todd Gurley that to really help in unfold, unleash the offense that way. But how much do you see this year as being, so crucial to the kind of like the McVay philosophy and to really unlock that high powered offense from the first 2 years?
Yeah, the McVay philosophy and the Les Snead philosophy, his approach to free agency, approach to the draft are different from other GMs. And, if it all works, then those guys will be confirmed as geniuses. But I think you're right. This could be the first year that people begin to become impatient, right? Remember, this could be a really good team and still, have trouble in that division. It's the deepest division on paper. In the league, the 49ers are going to be back. Seattle is still there. Arizona is only going to get better. Getting a number one seed, or even extended home field advantage in the playoffs isn't necessarily a given. And what happens if they don't win 11 games? What if they win 9 games again and they don't win a playoff game? Yeah, I think there would begin to be pressure. That's not to say that, any of that is looming as we speak.
No, I don't think so. I mean, I think there will be a honeymoon standpoint for a certain standpoint. And, obviously Stafford has already done well in some of his early interviews with the media to kind of endear himself to the LA community. And again, it helps to be Clayton Kershaw's friend. So you get that stamp of approval. You get a little extra rope.
He seems to be impressing his teammates. I asked, who was I asking the other day? Oh, Leonard Floyd, who hasn't been on the field very much with him, but was around him, across the line of scrimmage when they were both in another division, and has been around him now for a few weeks with the Rams. And I was asking, how complicated is it for a guy to come in a leadership position and establish himself as a leader of a team around guys who have, I didn't put it this way, but done more in the playoffs than he ever has, right? It's not as simple as him just saying, follow me, I know the way, right? But Floyd's answer was he's a natural leader and guys are buying in to what he's saying. And I get the impression that he's showing the respect to, for instance, his wide receivers that they deserve because they've been producing and going to the playoffs for years now. So it seems to be working. That said, not until tomorrow will the media actually be allowed into the facility to watch OTAs for however long we're allowed to watch. So we're right now we're getting the good news. We'll see.
Yeah, everybody's in their best shape of their life. Everybody's it's all the best. We've heard it plenty of times, definitely in baseball locker rooms and everything. So you were talking about receivers, and Robert Woods and Cooper Kupp have been two of the most consistent and really sometimes underrated wide receivers in the NFL and for fantasy football, which we talk about a lot. Woods had 129 targets last year. Kupp had 124. I don't foresee those numbers going down, especially in a 17-week season. But with talking about the volume, do you see the types of targets being a little different for each of them?
That's interesting. I would think that they would continue to play the roles that they play really well, which is, they're the reliable, take a short pass and turn it into yards after catch. Guys who are invaluable to a team. The Rams lost one wide receiver in Josh Reynolds, who was basically their number three last year, but they'll presumably get a bigger role from Van Jefferson in his second year, and then they've added DeSean Jackson and the rookie Tutu Atwell to presumably stretch the defense. Those are more hands to feed, more mouths to feed than last year. And Robert Woods was saying yesterday, essentially, that he's willing to share. He's willing to see the pie carved up among more guys and have fewer touches if the more diverse passing game gets the Rams to the Super Bowl. And that's a 29-year-old veteran who's done a lot but hasn't gone all the way yet, speaking. And so from a fantasy standpoint, I guess you're looking at does anybody emerge from that group of, what did I name, five guys? Who catches passes for 1,000 yards. I don't know. I'm not sure that would be the ideal. I think you're right. I mean, I think Woods and Kupp are the two you can count on, and then everything else will emerge in training camp, and we're just going to kind of have to watch and keep subscribe to the Daily News and the Orange County Register, and we'll try to keep you posted.
Yes, definitely. Very much. Very much. Yes, believe me. Yeah, the Daily News is definitely old home for me. So please subscribe and get Kevin's stuff. another player who really showed up a lot at the end of last year was Cam Akers. And in fantasy football, bell cow running backs are just golden. They are just so important. From week 12 on, I mean, week 12, he got 21 carries, and then he was getting carries even though he was battling a sprained ankle there at the end and in the playoffs. Do you see him kind of continuing that trend and really shouldering the majority of the carries in this season? Or do you think Daryl Henderson might sneak some in there to kind of be a little annoying to people who would love to see him see Akers get all of the touches around, especially around the goal line?
Yeah. Akers was the Rams leading rusher by a margin of 1 yard last year, 625 to 624 over Daryl Henderson. I would think that margin would grow, but and you referred to the end of last season from week 11 through the end of the playoffs, Cam Akers averaged 92 yards a game, I think, which over the course of the entire season would have put him third in the league. I'm not forecasting a continuation of that exactly, but I would think he would, I haven't heard anything other than that they see him as the number one guy that they drafted him to be. Assuming he stays healthy, and he's pretty tough even when he's not healthy. I would think he would be the guy. And well, you know, one thing we'll see is, you know, is he catching passes out of the backfield more than last year? We know Daryl Henderson can do good things in that role. So I think we'll still see both of them, I would think, unlike a year ago, Akers will begin the season as a clear number one.
And you know, it seems like I vividly remember the 2017, 2018 seasons where it was Gurley that really made that offense go. And I kind of feel like McVay wants to kind of get back to that, where kind of having the running back be the fulcrum of the offense.
That would be a big load to put on Akers, to expect him to be Todd Gurley at Gurley's best. But sure, to have, you know, the play action passing game work, you have to have a real threat at running back. So they'll certainly try to establish that.
You know, when we were talking about the mouths to feed from the pass catching side, we didn't talk about Tyler Higbee. He got 60 targets last year, kind of sharing the tight end load with Gerald Everett. Everett's gone. Could some of those targets, those tough over the middle targets, end up? Could Higbee be a guy that sees some increase, because he closed 2019 so incredibly, and people from the fantasy standpoint were going nuts, and that was a big disappointment. Maybe this year he lives up to the hype.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think so. And I should have mentioned him. And speaking of all the mouths to feed, I think he battled through a lot of injuries last year. Another tough guy. And then we'll see what role Bryson Hopkins plays in his second year. How much he'll take over from Gerald Everett. But the shape of the offense and what the emphases are, who gets a bigger share or a smaller share is I think to be determined. But Higbee is somebody who by the way provided a downfield threat a lot of times. I think he's an attractive option for people looking for a tight end.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, once you get past Travis Kelce and George Kittle and Darren Waller, he's one of those dart throws that people want to look at and be like, oh, maybe him, you know, maybe Stafford will unlock him. So there's so much on it, as it is, so much comes back to Stafford, even though we were talking about the offense being, you know, riding on Akers' shoulders. It's really going to be Stafford's offense. You know, we touched on a little bit with DeSean Jackson, Van Jefferson, and Tutu Atwell. Could one of them be a sleeper this year, or do you think they're, you know, at least two of them are going to be more field stretchers?
Well, I would think Jackson would get the first, you know, first crack if there's going to be a pecking order between the two field stretchers, meaning him and Atwell. I mean, at 34, he's had injuries. If it's me, I would I'd ride him as long as. As he's out there, you know, and allow Atwell to get a taste and learn from, you know, a veteran who is in some ways similar as a small, fast downfield pass catcher. So, you know, maybe early in the season, DeSean Jackson does play a big role. And then Van Jefferson, you know, I'm curious to see what his role and what his specialty is going to be. You know, his strength seems to be running precise, very professional routes, but not necessarily, you know, burner speed. So maybe he's something in between the kind of underneath role of Kupp and Woods and the downfield guys.
We're going to see. I know one of the things with Jefferson, I remember seeing a note that he had the fastest 40 time among all of the players at the Senior Bowl when he was there. So, you know, I wonder if, you know, maybe people are sleeping on his speed. Who knows? I mean, I do still think that the Kupp and Woods are going to drive the vast majority of the targets, but I'm going to be very intrigued as to how kind of the pie gets sliced up outside of them and Higby and whatever Cam Akers gets.
Yeah, you know, they didn't really try hitting throws downfield very much last year. You know, that's one of the replies to the idea that they needed to add that dimension. You know, it didn't seem like Goff was throwing downfield much. You know, it's not because there weren't some good examples of Josh Reynolds hauling in long passes in the past. So, you know, whether that was how McVay saw Goff, or, you know, the inability of the line to give him time to throw downfield, or Goff's, you know, limited ability to extend plays, you know, we'll see. But we, you know, I would expect the O-line to continue to get better, although they had the big loss at center in Austin Blythe, and you know, and then Stafford is Stafford with all of the ways that team he has to beat you.
And, you know, speaking of that line, I mean, yeah, the loss of Blythe was big. And I remember tweeting, we exchanged a couple of tweets during the draft, you know, where I was, I know for me, you know, being a Ram fan, second time around, now that they returned, I wanted to see them beef up the line, just because I always feel like you need to add an offensive lineman every draft, even if it's just from a developmental standpoint, and they didn't get anybody. The interesting thing that came out was that, you know, Snead and McVay feel like they like the depth of the line. They feel comfortable with that. I mean, this was a group that finished number three for PFF last year in the final grades. What kind of sense did you get about the comfort in the line that's returning this year?
Well, I was surprised, as you were, that they didn't draft anybody. You know, I think a lot of us thought center could have been the number one priority. And instead they kind of doubled down on adding the deep dimension to the passing game. But they, yeah, I think they see center as a, you know, as a position where they can just find guys, and you know, or move guys over. And moving Austin Corbett from right guard to center, which is the position where he began his NFL career in Cleveland, appears to be an option. Brian Allen, who was their starting center in 2019, but missed all of last year with a serious knee injury, he's around. They say he's healthy. Coleman Shelton is another center. So when we talked with Stafford the other day, he said he's been taking snaps from a rotation of guys so far. Indications are that Austin Corbett will get a crack, and I guess Bobby Evans would move into the right guard position. But we're speaking 100 days out from opening night. a lot can change. But you're right. You know, the O-line went from a perception of being a real hole for the Rams to pretty good as some of those young guys developed, and that really old guy.
And I think some people were I think he was talking about retiring before the 2020 season, and then he comes back. I think he was top five left tackles in the NFL according to Pro Football Focus. I mean, it was a phenomenal season for him. I just wish he hadn't gotten hurt.
Right. Yeah, and that's a worry. Talking about Andrew Whitworth, a real serious injury. But he came back by the end of the season, and I think we were all kind of waiting for him to announce that would be it. And instead, he said he was ready to go for his 39-year-old season. I think he turns 40 toward the end of the season. But he's on he's going into the second of a 3-year contract, but really taking it year by year. As long as he wants to do it, and he appears to be nothing but fit. So they're happy to have him.
Well, if we find out that he's doing the TB12 method, the Tom Brady, we'll expect him to be doing it for a couple more years after that. So, yesterday came the announcement that SoFi Stadium was going to be at full capacity this year. First off, how weird was it covering games there that in an empty stadium? And then you've seen so many crazy things. How much energy does a team derive from that home crowd?
Oh, it was definitely weird. I mean, to think back and realize that, I was one of, 100 people watching those games. driving in with no traffic and parking 100 feet from the from the entrance, these are things I might miss. But it'll be great to see what that place is like with fans in it. Everybody asks what is it like, and it appears as if there's not a bad seat in the house. It's a very vertically constructed stadium, so even if you're at the top, you're close to the field in a certain way. But you can't know until there are people in it. And not unexpected news yesterday that they plan to have full capacity. The Dodgers are already, going that direction as of June 15 when California fully opens. Pretty welcome news. It's like there's a milestone a month. Now, the Rams also announced yesterday that the last of their mandatory minicamp practices on June 10th will be an open practice at SoFi. People can go on the Rams website and, reserve free tickets. So that'll be, officially the first time that fans see the Rams on the field. And then in August, we'll have the Rams Chargers exhibition game, which will be the first actual game, and so on. Pretty exciting. As someone who spent a lot of years covering horse racing and going to Hollywood Park, the racetrack. Oh, yeah. I still haven't gotten over the awareness of where I am on the racetrack property every time I'm on the football property, right? But it's good to see that that great old LA sports venue become a great new LA sports venue.
You touched on the Dodger years. I'd love to hear a favorite Tommy Lasorda story. How many years were you on the beat?
I was on the beat itself for 3 years during, I guess you would call it the Fernando Valenzuela era, but it included the Jack Clark home run and a couple of really bad seasons. And then as a columnist and as a, you know, generalist, I was around the team for a long time and, you know, and helped out with coverage in the great year of 1988, et cetera. So, you know, Tommy, for anybody who was around the Dodgers in, well, for a long period of time, was the most memorable figure in LA sports, in, you know, in ways good and bad. So 10 years ago, probably, I'm at Dodger spring training and I go to the Starbucks down the road, and on the counter is a, it's Easter time. There's an Easter basket, except it's not eggs, it's baseballs in the basket. And as I'm paying for my coffee, a hand comes from behind me and reaches out and grabs one of those baseballs. And the weird thing is I immediately recognize this hand. It's an old, gnarled left hand with a crooked index finger. Anybody who knows Tommy recognizes that immediately as Tommy's hand, right? Yeah. I immediately think, typical Tommy, he wants something, he just grabs it, right? I turn around, I say, Tommy, he's embarrassed. He knows what I'm thinking. He says, Kevin, I need the ball for a kid. I think, okay, sure. I pay for my coffee. I go and sit down with a newspaper. I'm there for 20 minutes. Tommy is still there. He has signed the ball for maybe a 10-year-old boy in a baseball uniform. And he has continued to talk to the boy and his father. And he's giving the boy the Lasorda pep talk. Right? And what can you say except that's genuine? I don't think he knew these people. He just couldn't help trying to fire up a young baseball player with the Lasorda, let's call it, charm, right? So I always thought that's the full Tommy, right? You can talk about the vulgar side of him, but in the end, he made a lot of people happy, and he brought out the best in a lot of people. And I guess I choose to remember mostly the real positive things about this man. And I hope people are aware of the whole picture, but also are thankful for having had him in the LA sports scene for so long.
Just incredible. I got to know him a little bit, and you know, I got to know that softer side, and it was phenomenal. Just absolutely phenomenal.
He was a fully human being, you know.
one of the greatest lives lived I've ever seen. Absolutely. So
yeah,
just incredible. So last question is kind of a fun one that I like to ask our guests. Obviously, you've lived in LA. You've seen good tacos. What are your favorite taco meats?
I'm going to go very specific. Just around the corner from me in Winnetka in the San Fernando Valley is Poncho's Mexican Restaurant. Poncho's, P-O-N-C-H-O. Mm-hmm. And about once a week I go there and I get the grilled fish taco. And I'm so little a foodie, I can't even tell you what the fish is. But I love that. It's light, it's tasty. And let me give a plug to my local Poncho's Mexican restaurant and their grilled taco.
Oh man. We made fish taco is just phenomenal. Phenomenal. Well, I'm your neighbor, so I can I'm going to go find that place. I'll definitely give them a little patronage. I'm going to close it out. I mean, yeah, Kevin, I can't thank you enough for this. I can't thank you enough for back in the day, that great counsel to the kid sports writer. This has been a great time. I mean, I hope you don't mind. I may be hitting you back at some point just for some tips from inside the locker room. But yeah, really just been absolute pleasure. Thank you so much for doing this. Can you let our listeners know where they can find you on Twitter and anywhere else?
Please. Yeah. Twitter is at Kevin Modesti. KEVINMODESTI. The daily news is very simply dailynews.com, OCRegister.com, the nine other Southern California newspapers throughout the area. I should mention that we have a subscription sale going on right now, 6 months of digital readership for $2.
Oh, that's outstanding.
I submit that a newspaper is a bargain at any time, but especially right now. So with the football season revving up and the Lakers and Clippers in the playoffs and baseball in full swing, this would be a great time for Southern California sports fans to start reading a daily paper. Not already.
Oh, incredible. Incredible. Kevin, thank you again. And that's everything for our show today. I'm going to thank you to YouTube and special thank you to Anchor for being our hosting network and making sure Independent Podcast gets out into the Familia community. And please make sure to subscribe, hit the like button when you can, and make sure you follow us on Twitter and Instagram at Familia FFB. You can find me at Jorge Martin 17, as you could see there on our YouTube page. Also click a like on our YouTube page and our original content at familiaffb.com, and don't forget our Facebook page. Gracias, everybody. Otra vez, gracias to my buen amigo Kevin Modesti, and remember, everybody, todos somos familia. Yeah.